This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later in the show, a preview of Millennicon, a sci-fi fantasy convention to promote literacy. But first, electronic health records, or EHRs, are common in the practice of medicine today, and there are lots of benefits to being able to store, access, and share patient histories digitally. But many doctors are concerned about meaningful use requirements governing electronic health records. Those regulations, along with increased health insurance provider bureaucracy, are in part the reason some doctors are switching to direct patient care practices that don't accept insurance. Joining us to discuss EHRs, meaningful use, and direct primary care practices is local physician Dr. Michael Strickland, Secretary Treasurer and Committee Chair with United Physicians and Surgeons of America. And you can join the conversation with your questions and comments at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Mike, good afternoon. Thank you for joining us.
Good afternoon, Mark. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, on its face, electronic health records sound like they're a good idea. So what are the problems that you and other doctors are concerned about with EHRs?
They're a tremendous idea. It's 2015. All of us use computers all the time and want to do so. But the problem here is the government-mandated form of EHR, which is really limiting the ability to optimize EHR use.
When you say government mandated, or what's involved in that? I mean, is there going to be a penalty if you don't adapt it, or what are the consequences?
Correct. There were some incentives put in place to encourage their use, and then that was followed by penalties if you didn't adopt them.
Now, you say that EHRs are a good idea. It's the modern times. It's 2015. We should be moving in this direction. Why are doctors so concerned about that? I mean, isn't this a case of you can let's work this system through, let's get it working properly? I mean, is it fraught with problems? Is that what's going on, Mike?
Correct. Well, I think the third-party involvement in healthcare for so many years and the rules there kind of held that back. So doctors and hospitals stayed on paper longer than other industries. But many of us were trying to move to them, and I did so in my own private practice in 2005. We designed our own system. It was totally electronic, and it cost about $15,000, all costs included, hardware, software development. Many of the systems being mandated now are $75,000 to $200,000. Medical Economics Magazine recently said that 30% of practices spent over $200,000 on these systems, and any of them I've used have been inferior to the one that we used in my practice.
Now, are all practices required to follow meaningful use rules, or are just those taking government payments, such as the VA and the Medicare and Medicaid?
Correct. It's a government issue. But government is involved in about a third of all health care in the U.S.
Part of the controversy over electronic health records, it revolves around this word, the words meaningful use. Explain what is meaningful use and why this is causing such a stir.
Well, in 2009, the government was interested in increasing and promoting the use of electronic health records in medicine. And that's a great idea and something that needed to happen. But they set up a committee of 23 people, 9 of whom were physicians, 2 of those were practicing physicians, to draw up these criteria as to what meaningful use of EHR would actually consist of. And they were heavily lobbied by the tech industry, as well as the members of Congress who were a part of this system and of getting the High Tech Act in place, which came out in 2009. And so they got these really kind of cumbersome, expensive, unwieldy systems mandated, and then got $25 billion appropriated to implement this. And there's a really interesting article that's linked on our website, letmydoctorpractice.org, on the updates page. It's out of the New York Times, February 2013. A shift in digital data swells profits in an industry. And that really gives you some great information about what happened there. But these incentive payments, that's where the problem came in. When you couple that with the fact that many doctors were being driven out of private practice into employed practice, and that's also somewhat related to government policies. The government pays more to hospitals for the same procedures, the same things that are done as in a private or a clinic office. So now this incentive program was set up for up to $100,000 per doctor to adopt the EHR. Well, now that the doctors were employed, it was the employers who were getting that money for the most part. And so the social contract between doctor and patient has always been, or that my generation was raised on, was as the doctor, I get the training, the license. It's my responsibility to keep up with the scientific information and to make the best recommendation I can for my patient. And then I assume legal responsibility for that by signing the chart and signing the orders. Well, now that the employer is up for, has that money up for grabs, they don't have a lot of that. They didn't invest in the medical training. They don't look the patient in the eye. They don't look the family in the eye. If something goes wrong, explain what happened. They don't sign the chart and the orders, and they don't take legal responsibility directly. So they don't have to worry about a lot of that. All they know is if they comply with all these criteria, then they'll get a big bonus check. And the first thing first time I found that out was when I closed my practice in 2010. And the practice was wonderful. I loved everything about it. I thought the patients got great care. And in 2010, the malpractice carrier gave us an award for placing in the top three of 877 practices that they had evaluated that year on site. But we just couldn't make money. And so the VA gave me an offer for a full-time position, and I had worked there part-time in West Virginia, and I took it. So everything was good then. I had the same nursing team I'd worked with before. They were really good. The patients were great. Everything was fine. But the problem was now there were these things called clinical reminders, which is basically the VA version of meaningful use criteria.
Oh, so this is where you first encountered EHR issues.
Right. So as many as 15 of these might pop up at every visit, and we were required to do them. So a veteran comes in, 60-some years old, is complaining of chest pain. I'm wondering, is he about to have a heart attack? Before I can do that, I've got to ask him, were you sexually abused in Korea? Can I help you quit smoking? Have you had your cholesterol checked? And on. Now, these are wonderful things. In my private practice, I focused on preventive medicine, and I agree with most of them completely. But they should be done. We did those once a year. We didn't do them at every visit. So at the VA, we were required to do those for every visit, including walk-ins. So we were required to work walk-ins into our schedule. And so I said to someone from the director's office, he asked me how things were going. I had just been there a few weeks. I said, everything's great except these clinical reminders. They should be done once a year or at a specific visit for that purpose. They're interfering with dealing with the problem at hand. He said, that will never happen. Well, why is that? Well, because the more of those boxes you click off, the bigger the bonus check the administrators get. So just to give you one example, one day I had a really, really busy clinic going. I had a patient in his 60s with a hemoglobin of 6. That's less than half the normal blood count. Something was very wrong with him. I didn't have a room to put him in, so he was sitting in the hallway. I was trying to get him admitted to the hospital. In another room, I had a 45-year-old veteran whose liver enzymes were in the 500s. That's many times the normal limit.
Is that liver failure at that point? Or?
Essentially, yes.
Okay.
And both of these are very dangerous problems. He's about to walk out against medical advice, and I'm trying to explain to him why that's not a good idea. Meanwhile, I have five more veterans backed up who are waiting to be seen. Well, the nurse comes out and hands me a note because the administration had just called her and said, you failed to address smoking on a veteran earlier today, so you're instructed to stop doing what you're doing and take care of that. Well, this happened many times. Usually I wasn't that busy or there weren't that acute problems going on, but they never asked me, did I actually address this with the veteran, the smoking or whatever issue. They just wanted to stand over my shoulder and watch me click that box. They never, ever in the year I was there asked me, did you address the problem the veteran brought in, the veteran's concern? Again, they wanted those boxes clicked so that bonus check would come.
You know, Mike, supporters of electronic health records would point out that these are a great step forward in patient care, and that they're much preferable than keeping like mounds and mounds of paper files for patient records. And there are even doctors who point out that in some cases they've helped them address the issue of prescription allergies, that kind of thing. So how do you respond to that? I mean, there is value in EHRs.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we want to use them. In my practice, we used an EHR, as I think I mentioned, that we designed. And that was $15,000 for everything, much less than the current systems, and much superior in my experience. The problem here is who's designed these things. And again, this committee that was composed mostly of non-physicians, only one or two really practicing physicians. So I worked for a hospital, was my last employed job, and they used a system called AllScripts. And you can't get everything onto one page. Your notes on one tab, one section, the labs in another, the radiology, etc. And I told them, when a patient comes in with a problem, it's like assembling a crossword puzzle. I'm sorry, a jigsaw puzzle. The pieces are here and there, they're scattered. I'm trying to flip them over, look at them, put them together, and I'm assembling a nice, clear picture that then I can refer to next time they come in. Well, you can't do that with a lot of these systems. You're clicking all over the place, and by the time you get over to this one area, now you've forgotten what's on the other one because you're seeing multiple patients that day. Often I would have to write them down on paper as I went through the tabs, so again, I could assemble things in one area. So I've called some of the EHR companies. I was told by my hospital employer that they wouldn't help me, that AllScripts wouldn't help me, and I called and confirmed that. I told them, I'm having trouble taking care of my patients with your system, and can we collaborate to work this out? No response. I looked at their online job offerings. Marketing people and IT people, but no clinicians, no doctors, no nurses. Michael Korchak, who is an ENT physician as well as an EHR programmer, highly experienced, went to their EHR company back after Meaningful Use came out and said, let me help you design something that's really high quality to taking care of patients. And they said, no, we're not interested. If we meet these meaningful use criteria, we'll make a lot of money. We don't need to invest in trying to improve patient care.
Mike, why are different medical providers using different software systems? Does each one have to meet certain minimum standards?
Mostly they're trying, especially the employers, are trying to get systems that will help them meet those criteria so that they can get that bonus. They also tend to try to help you upcode. So you put more, it's basically make work. You're putting a lot of stuff into the note that doesn't need to be there, that's cluttering things up for the clinician trying to care for the patient. But when a coder, a reviewer from the insurance company or Medicare looks at it, these are not doctors, they may not even be nurses, they've just got a set of criteria, and if your note meets that, then you get paid for a level 4, say, instead of a level 3. So the billing tail is not only wagging the clinical dog, it is beating it to death.
We will continue our conversation about electronic health records, and you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. We're talking about electronic health records with Dr. Michael Strickland, Secretary Treasurer and Committee Chair with United Physicians and Surgeons of America. Now, Michael, your organization, it's expressing its concerns over electronic health records. And how many other medical organizations are involved in this debate?
I think there's many who are interested in this topic. The AMA recently has come out on it. A National Nurses Union, which is the largest nurses union, has called for a moratorium on implementation of meaningful use.
Now, different medical practices, they can't easily access other practice records. So are there plans to standardize so that one doctor can access records from another doctor?
I think that's a good long-term goal, but I don't think it's necessary in the short term. You can easily email a copy of your note, the basic information, and they can take it from there. I think one idea that that the government may have is once we get this information entered, then succeeding doctors won't have to enter it. They'll just be able to look at it. The problem with that is they're often being entered by medical assistants, and so they're often not accurate. And so if I know that part of the information is bad, now I have to assume all the information is bad until I go redo it.
Now, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services says it's going to ease the reporting burdens on doctors. Does that help resolve your concerns about electronic health records?
Very little. This is just the tip of the iceberg. Medicare regulations are 130,000 pages. That's almost twice the total IRS code. So it just addresses the very tip of the iceberg. And for me, it's gotten so bad that I've just had to opt out of the system completely, and I've reopened my private practice as a direct patient care that is totally independent of that system.
So tell me, what is direct patient care? How does that fit into this whole debate over electronic health records?
Well, some physicians, like me, have just said that they can either do one of two things. They can either focus on being good clinicians, good doctors, or they can focus on meeting all these regulations and requirements, and there's no time for both. So some of us, about 6.5% of American doctors at this point, have gone to this direct model, which is to say lower end things, more common medical things like primary care, like lower end surgeries, lower cost, should not go through third party payers, insurance, or government. Should be a direct interaction between the patient and their doctor. So you can use a health savings account to do that, which is a tax-free account. But if you think about other insurance models, like your car insurance, you typically insure that in case you total your car or have a major problem. You don't try to insure every gas fill-up, oil change. And if you did, you can imagine what kind of nightmare it might be. You need some gas, first to check and see if the station is in your network. If they're not, maybe you have to drive across town to find one. Then you get a prior authorization going. You wait to see if the company approves. Then you fill up. You submit to the company for reimbursement. They reject the claim. You have to hire somebody who knows insurance billing to resubmit it. And then you wait 60 days or more to get paid. If you can imagine how much fun driving would be and how expensive it would be in that system, that's how medicine is.
So what you're saying is that you shouldn't be using health insurance for basic primary care issues. Am I understanding you correctly?
Right. I think the insurance model is legitimate and serves a great role in unexpected, expensive issues. Right. But when you get down to things that are you know for sure you're going to need primary care, you can't save any money by going through an insurance company. If you say I had $100 to pay for this and it's not enough, so I'm going to hand it over to United Healthcare and let them take care of it. Well, they're going to take $20 off the top, and now there's $80 left to pay. So the only way that works is if the patients and/or the doctors or both are kind of losing out.
So how is this different from concierge medicine?
I don't know that it's different.
Is there somewhat of an elitist element to doing direct primary care for patients? Or
I've kind of worried about that in the past. Some of the concierge models were a big payment once a year, maybe $1,200 or something. But the model I'm working under is Atlas MD, invented by Josh Umber, a family practitioner in Wichita. And he's got a fantastic video that anyone can see on our website. It's linked on the update page, Josh Umber, or you can find it on YouTube. But this model is $50, $75, or $100 per month, depending on your age. And everything we can do in the office is included under that. So you come in as many times as you need, any tests we can do in the office, or house calls, whatever you need, we do at no extra charge. Anything we have to send out, such as a lab, we negotiate with the lab or the imaging place for the best price we can, and we pass those on at cost to our patients. So our labs typically run $2 to $10 a piece. For an example, cholesterol panel, $6. At the hospital I worked for a year or two ago, $300. The imaging we have is $100 to $400. So it starts with x-ray at $100, ends with MRI at $400. For comparison, if you'd get an MRI through your insurance in Cincinnati, it'll typically cost $1,400 to $2,400. So I don't think that it's an elitist model. I think it's going to save people money in the long run.
But patients would still need to keep their health insurance, correct?
Right. We think they should have major medical insurance, just like you have insurance for your car or your home in case of a catastrophe. But you don't try to cover routine expenses with it.
Now, do you expect direct primary care is going to be a growing area of medicine, especially what's going on with EHRs?
I don't know. I've just started mine. I don't know if I'll be able to make it work. I think some people have. But some way, we've got to find a way to get out from under this heavy-handed control that's coming from people who have no training or experience in the field.
Now, Mike, tell me about the summit that's coming up later this year. I believe it's in July that your organization is having.
Well, let me tell you, first of all, physiciansfoundation.org does biennial surveys of doctors, and they found recently that over 80% of doctors are pessimistic about the future of medicine. They feel the profession's in decline, and they feel there's little or nothing they can do about it. So over 80%. So we're among that 80%, and we tried various ways over the last several years to address this. I joined the AMA in 2005. I wrote them a two-page letter listing some of my concerns. This was before meaningful use. And I didn't get any response. Several follow-up phone calls. I said, what can I do? Can I get on a committee? What can I do? No response to anything. We've written and spoken with our representatives, with other media, the EHR companies, our employers, and just weren't getting anywhere. So we decided to form our own group. We feel like doctors and patients should have a voice in this system and not just be told by outside forces how this should go. We should have a seat at the table. So we created one.
So your summit is coming up on July 20th through 26th, correct?
Correct. That's an in-person event in Keystone, Colorado, just outside of Denver. But it's also going to be live webcast, interactive webcast, so anyone can participate from anywhere in the country. It's called a National Grand Rounds on the State of American Medicine for Physicians. But there will be a section for patient and public comment, and we greatly want patients and the public to participate, to lend their voice, and also to vote or rate or put their name behind speakers, behind ideas, behind solutions that they support.
Well, Mike, thanks for talking with us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Local physician Dr. Michael Strickland, he is the Secretary, Treasurer, and Committee Chair with United Physicians and Surgeons of America.